Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to this week's Weekly D. And today I have the lovely Andrew on, also known as Tattoo Pole Boy. Some of you may or may not know Andrew. Andrew is a pole dancer living in London, and Andrew is most well known for being a para pole dancer who pole dances with one leg, one and a half, technically, I think we should say. And he is amazing. I'm a very big fan of Andrew. I love the stuff that he does. I mean, he is doing stuff on a pole that I can't do with two legs. So the fact that he can do it with one is literally quite incredible. So if you're not following him already, you need to go and follow him literally right now. But without further ado, this is the Weekly D. Because honey, if you aren't getting your D on the daily, you better at least be getting it once on the weekly.
Weekly D. If you're not getting any and you want some tea, then come and join Dan up on the Weekly D.
Well, a big welcome to you, Andrew. Thank you so much for joining me on my podcast. It's been great to speak to you. I'm super excited to get chatting with you today about lots of different things. But how are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. Very excited to be on your podcast.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, it's funny, actually, like, you know how we live in the same country, and actually London's not that far away from me, really, but we never really get to see each other, do we? Because I feel like London, I always tell people that London is almost like its own country in some weird ways, because I feel like you have like the London community and then you have the UK pole community.
Yeah.
London people just stick in London.
It's so true. It's so true. But also kind of like, I mean, one of my issues is that I have such a busy life that actually the only time I sort of leave London is a competition, or, you know, it's kind of, I have to fit to really sit down to make that time to do stuff outside of London. It's not that I don't want to. It's just we all lead a very hectic life down here, you know?
Mm-hmm. London is just like a lot of hustle and bustle, isn't it? Like,
it really
is.
It really is.
You don't drive as well because you live in London, right?
No, well, actually, I do drive. And until about 5 years ago, I had a car. I live right in the centre of London. And I sort of realised, why am I buying new cars to park up in central London? You know, it's kind of crazy. So yeah, as of 5 years ago, I stopped owning a car, but I still drive a bit.
This random question, I'm just going to know. I think I might have even asked some of this before, but do you have that thing in London where you can register for this like company where you can literally just go up to their cars, you like put a little card thing on it, or you use your phone to get into it and you just hire the car?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's even better now. It used to be you hired a car from a car parking space and you had to return it to that car parking space. Now, the same company, you can hire a car by the minute. So I could find a car in the area, drive it to where I want to go, park it, leave it there. That's it. Done. So it's almost like there's hire bikes now. It's brilliant. It's genius. It's genius.
Yeah, although, it's like the scooter things.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It is brilliant. Yeah. And it means that it's pointless owning a car living in, you know, I live right in the centre of London, zone one. It's pointless owning a car.
Right. But I feel like that's also a reason why I don't see many of the London people ever, because I guess to get out of London, it's a ball ache, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah,
on the
it's,
tube.
Yeah.
I was saying to Chantel McShannington Ratchet, I was saying to her, I was like, you know, unless it's on a tube line, people in London are like, ugh, I'm not going there.
There is a little bit of that involved.
Yeah, it's cool though. I mean, I do love London. I don't know that I could live there, but yeah, I used to live in Hemel, and I used to be like, well, that's like close enough that I can get in, but far away enough that I'm not in London. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, to be honest, I've lived in London for so long, but I have my little area of London. So it's very much, I live near Old Street, Barbican, and I rarely go outside
of that area.
So it's the central zone, but it's on the east side of the central zone.
Right, okay.
It's an amazing location to live, but I kind of stay within my area. I hardly ever go to the West End anymore, even though it's like a, you know, it's 4 minutes on the tube. It's, you know, it's a 10-minute bus ride. I just never bother.
Yes, fair enough. That must be crazy expensive living so central to that.
Oh, I'm really lucky. I moved. I got a flat on a street that nobody wanted to live in an area that nobody wanted to live in 25 years ago. And now the area has kind of taken off. It's incredible. So it's
So
pure luck.
lucky.
It's pure luck.
So you just bought at the right time, basically. Nice. So before we get into like many of the questions that I wanted to talk to you about today, I like people to just have like the opportunity to kind of like introduce themselves to anyone who's listening. Maybe they well, they probably definitely don't know you as Andrew because everyone calls you Tattoo Pole Boy. Like literally, it's so funny. Like I even found it weird introducing you and saying hello like that, because that's whenever I say, I'm like, oh, have you seen Tattoo Pole Boy posted this? But I never ever say your name, so it's almost weird saying your
I
name.
know it's like sometimes that handle has become a bit of a weight around my neck. And it's like sometimes I want to use, sometimes I don't, but people don't necessarily know me by my name, so.
Right, exactly. But I tell you what, it is good for. It's good for like, you know, if you ever want to go traveling and teaching and stuff. No one's ever going to look up your real name because obviously, even if they did, it wouldn't come up anyway. And
Yeah,
that's
that's
actually
not
one
true.
thing in my career that I wish I'd done. I wish I'd given myself like a stage name, because a lot of the people with stage names who travel, you know, because visas can be such a nightmare to get. So if they don't apply for a visa, it doesn't really matter so much, because if they type their real name in and try Googling them, nothing will come up. They'd
It's so
have to
true.
know their alias, I guess. But yeah, so that's the only reason why. But hey, so tell us a little bit about you. Who is Tattoo Pole Boy?
So my name's Andrew Gregory, as you said. I'm originally from Yorkshire. I've been living in London now for 30 years. I'm getting really old. I'm like 51 now. My main job is I'm a hairdresser, and I have a very successful business. I don't work in the shop. My work takes me all over the world, and I have very high-end clients. It's a great business that I have that allows me to do lots of other stuff because I don't have to do a huge amount of work to earn a great living. Then I kind of came to pole, I think I was 45 when I started, really just purely by chance. I happened to do another pass within a pole studio that was nothing to do with pole, and decided to give pole a go. And here I am.
And here you are.
I started with two legs. I now have half a leg missing. It's been, it's been an
Been a
interesting
journey.
journey. It has, and I've had a very interesting life. I've done amazing things throughout my life, and
So
it's my life
tell
has
us
sort of
about that.
morphed all along. Well, from my early career in hairdressing, when I was 21, I was headhunted for a job in London. When I used to work at a salon in Harrogate, which is the town where I come from. And within a couple of weeks, I'd already been flown out to do a job in New York. I was working at New York Fashion Week. I was doing shows, London Fashion Week, editorial, commercials, movies. It was kind of a crazy start to a career at that age. And then that kind of morphed to, I stopped doing those sort of jobs because I found them very taxing. It's very draining. It's a great career, but when you are constantly in meetings rather than doing the job that you want to do, it gets challenging. So I kind of switched over to doing clients and have developed an amazing clientele. Again, that work takes me all over the world. I'm very lucky to have clients that can sort of afford that luxury of taking a hairdresser wherever they go,
That's amazing.
It's
What's so who's the, I don't know whether you're allowed to say, maybe not if you're still working there, but like, if have you ever like at any of the fashion shows, any of the big models, did you ever do any of like Naomi Campbell?
oh, absolutely.
Naomi Campbell.
And
Stop it.
Linda Evangelista, Alex Weck. I mean, the weird thing is, they're just models. That's kind of,
Sure. But
you're
still,
paid to
like,
well,
that's.
I get it,
I guess for you at the time, it probably didn't mean as much, right? Like, when you look back now, do you ever think, like, fucking hell, like, I cut Naomi Campbell's hair? Like, she's huge. Like,
But I've done bigger people. I mean, Some of the clients that I've done in the past, I mean, I think my most famous client I've ever done was Diana Ross, which I think is, I think was kind of real moment, actually, but as well as loads of other people on top of that. And I have great clients, even now, less celebrity clients now, because you find that celebrity clients want to call at the last minute and expect to get their hair done immediately. Well, that doesn't really work as for me planning an income, you know what I mean? So,
well, I thought you were going to say that a lot of celebrity clients maybe want their hair done for free and stuff then. I was expecting you to say something like that.
No. When they first come to you, they may want that. But when they're a return client, they don't expect it for free. But it's more that I need to... I'm one of those people that likes organization in my life. So my clients all book their appointments months, maybe a whole year in advance. So I know my work for the year. So I don't really deal very well with clients who expect to call it the day before and say they want their hair doing the next day. Mm-hmm. So that really is the way that I work best, is that organizational thing.
And these people are literally flying you to different countries. That's crazy. That is so cool. So yeah. Are you allowed to say what countries you've been to, like, to work?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky situation. No.
don't, if it's going to get you in trouble, don't say it.
That's so cool.
So I assume, obviously, dealing with this level of clientele, obviously, from what you're saying now, you have to have a certain level of privacy and keep their... Yeah. information like super quiet. Is that really, really hard when you're like, if it's like someone really famous and you love them and you want to tell everyone, like you just did, I don't know, like Beyonce's hair or something?
No, I mean, I will tell stories but take away names, you know. I'll say like, oh, I was doing a client and they told me this story, you know. You can take names and recognizable facts out of a story. But, you know,
Struck by any of them at all, or are you kind of used to it now?
Not anymore. I think you realize very quickly, these are just people. They are just people. Their public persona is very different to when you get them sat in your chair. Mm-hmm. I don't get starstruck anymore.
Oh, fair enough. So hairdressing was the first job that you ever started, was it? You started that from a young age and you've literally been doing it your whole life.
I started when I was 19. Originally, I was going to do biochemistry at university. Okay. And took some time out. I was going to take a year out and ended up with a Saturday job in a hairdresser's.
Well, I mean, what an amazing turnout. I mean, and I only say that because, you know, not every hairdresser has that career, right? So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, I still have to pinch myself sometimes,
right?
That, you know, the career that I've had, the career that I still have. I always say I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky to have met some of the clients that I have, but then I'm good at my job as well. You know, you have to back it up with something.
True. Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, it's, do you know what? It's so funny, actually. I'm glad you said that, because I feel like as well, like some people say, like, oh, Dan, you're so lucky that you just get to do pole full time. I'm like, I've actually worked really hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
I am, and
I agree with you. I am lucky as well. Like, but it's that, yeah, you have to, you, for everything that you're lucky with in life, you still got to work hard for it, right? You know,
it's never just luck,
of course.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But, yeah. So still hairdressing, still doing that. And you're doing that alongside teaching pole and obviously competing as well. You literally just didn't you just do pole art or elite?
I did elite pole championships. Elite,
sorry, my bad.
That's fine. And there's so many these days.
how are you managing that time? I mean, I assume you're not hairdressing every day, I'm guessing, by the fact that you're doing all of this other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of, because my clients pre-book all of their appointments, I know what my schedule is.
Nice.
And also I'm able to block out times and days. So my My teaching, I just teach one day a week, which is on a Sunday. So that's always easy to never do hair on a Sunday. Competitions, you know, I usually know well enough in advance that maybe I can move jobs around. I also perform, so I do a lot of performing at events and parties, those sort of things.
Yeah, which you're getting booked for lots of events now.
I mean, I still can't believe that people pay me to go and perform at amazing events. You know, it's never something I plan to do.
But Andrew, and I think the thing is though, like, and I hope you take this in the right way. Like, what you do is so impressive anyway. But to be doing that with one leg is like even crazier. Like, there's stuff you're doing with literally one leg that I can barely do maybe on a good day, like with two. And I just sort of think, this is insane. Like, you know, I'm always saving your stuff, like, and very rarely achieving any of it. But like, you know, so it is super impressive. It's like a real talent. I mean, have you had any circus shows contact you actually? Because I feel like,
well, yeah. And so I've worked with, Bijou, which is a circus company. I did the Queen's Jubilee with them. Nice. I've also done a couple of other things with them as well. And I'm in negotiations at the moment with another circus company for a residency, that may or may not happen. Let's see.
Oh, fingers crossed.
The rest of it has come through individual events contacting me. Again, I'll go back to that thing of luck. Of course it's luck that they have seen my work, but also I kind of get it. I'm unique. I have a very visual thing going on, the tattoos, the amputation. I kind of get why I get a lot of bookings.
Right.
But I mean, a real
very different something that you don't see. Oh,
absolutely.
Every day, you know?
Absolutely.
There's hundreds of pole dancers, but there's not many male. So not only yeah. male, I mean, there's not many male pole dancers anyway. Yeah. With one leg covered yeah. in tattoos, it's very cool. Like you know, so I totally get it. And it's great to see you doing like so many gigs. And you just recently did, and again, I assume you can talk about this because you did post about it. Was it Sure you did an advert with?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yes, I love the way you kind of like thought about it. It was like, oh yeah, I did that.
No, because it's funny. I was just talking about that yesterday. Yeah, I mean, that whole. Paid post thing is something else that's new to me. But yeah, I was approached to do a paid post on Instagram with them, and so, I mean, it was for a ridiculous amount of money, I've got to say.
For anyone who's listening to this, by the way, and is like, who the hell is Sure? Just because in different countries it's called different. Sure are like a deodorant company, big brand. I use them, like, really like big company. Probably part of like Unilever or something like that.
I think everything's part of Unilever, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it was weird when they approached me, they were kind of like saying, you know, what money do you want for that? And I'd sort of looked around and I sort of got a vibe of what people get, you know, for a paid post. But then I just thought, actually, do you know what? I am not going to give them a fee. I'm going to say to them, give me a starting point. Yeah. And I'm pleased that I did, because it was probably 10 times
what you were going to.
Exactly.
Right.
So if ever anybody asks you about paid partnerships, make them offer you a price first as a starting point.
Do you know what it is? I think we actually devalue ourselves a little bit within pole.
Absolutely.
We definitely don't feel like we're worth being paid properly. And actually, this is something that gets discussed quite a lot, actually. I know Layla from Blackstage posts a lot about this and like, you know, charging correct fees, and it's a really good topic. And but you know, when you're talking about, and you know, when we talk about, so I do paid posts for pole brands, but these are like small companies. I couldn't be charging them obviously what you probably charge Sure, of course.
Absolutely.
Different, isn't it? But then when these big companies contact you, you're a bit like, what the hell do we charge? And obviously we're talking like some of them are paying thousands. Like, I actually, so my studio, I have a tiny little studio in Hemel, it's small, but they were recording the This Girl Can advert, right,
yep.
Years ago, and this pre-COVID, and they wanted to use the studio because it was really near to where they were filming all these other bits for this advert, and they wanted pole, they wanted all these other sports, so they were in Hertfordshire, and they wanted to use my studio. I was right. Like, yeah, sure, and they were like, oh, we're going to pay this and this and this, and I was like, oh my God, it's like, this is amazing money.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Like, is that okay? I was like, yeah, it's okay. You know, you're like, yeah, it's fucking okay.
Yeah,
that's going to pay my rent for the studio for a few months. Do you know what I mean? I was this is crazy. But this is, people don't realize, I think, like how much money is in these like big brands, TV.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But so did you get any more opportunities or anything that came from the Shore advert? Like, are you working with them any more in the future, or are you done with Shore now and you're...
Not with them, but there's always, I mean, there's always like things in the pipeline. It's kind of, sometimes I feel like I need a manager or an agency to deal with all that stuff. But then actually... Yeah. I quite like doing it all myself as well, because then I'm not paying, you know, 25% to an agent.
Exactly.
But also, I don't rely on those things. All of those things that come along are, for me, I'm in a great position. I don't. It's not my wage. It's not my income. I have
exactly.
My income.
They're just for fun.
Exactly.
Extra money.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And you're so lucky in the sense that you've got this like. This full-time career already, like your hairdressing, which is actually something that I always speak to many people about. I'm like, I wish that was something that I had, because pole is my full-time thing, and it's the only thing I'm really qualified in is pole. It was the one thing that kind of like saved me career-wise, because I was just like, I had nothing else I wanted to do with my life.
And, but you've done really well, as in you sort of diversified, you know, you're obviously within the industry, you know. You're really good at opening different streams up as well. I think people that just teach pole and they do nothing else whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They don't do workshops. That you know, all you've got the brands or whatever. I think that's a very hard life. You know? And it's getting harder because everybody. Oh my God! Everybody is becoming a qualified pole dance instructor these days.
Yeah, and what's your thoughts on that? I mean, well, before, like, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what mine are because I post about it all the time. But like, I mean, I'm just intrigued to know what your thoughts are on it, because it's nothing against people. Do you know what? Someone literally just posted today. This is so funny that you just brought that up, because someone just posted today in an instructor group that I'm in, a studio owner group, sorry, that I'm in, and they were like, "Oh, I'm really losing my motivation. Like, I started the studio. I have no time to train. I've lost my love for pole." Blah blah. And this is what I'm always warning people against. I'm like, listen, if you're going to do this as a full-time thing, you've got to accept that you're probably going to lose a bit of love for it unless you really work hard to keep it. Whereas for someone like you who does it as, it's not your full-time thing, you've got hair as well. Yeah. So you can probably keep igniting your love for it as a, you know, your side hustle. I mean, what's your thoughts around like people just getting qualified willy-nilly here and there?
Well, so, I mean... I think some of the training out there is amazing.
Mm.
There's some that's not so amazing, but you know the big names that do it absolutely amazingly. I get slightly worried when somebody who has not really a huge amount of pole experience becomes qualified at maybe a level they're only just okay at.
Mm-hmm.
I really think you need to go out there, you need to get experience. You need to be super good at everything before you start teaching those sort of levels. You know, it's fine. If you only ever want to teach beginners, brilliant. But if you want to teach intermediate, make sure that you can do all of those intermediate moves strongly. I know. And well, I think there's very few people
that... of them.
Absolutely.
I mean, I hate laybacks, right? I hate laybacks. I know that sounds so stupid, silly move, really. And I can do them and I teach them when I really have to. Oh, but if I've got a student in class who I know does them better than me, I will use them as a demo.
I mean, we all have moves.
We all have those moves, don't we?
Yeah. And yeah, there's a whole load of moves that I can't physically do, but... There's alternatives, there's workarounds, If I really want to teach something that I struggle with because of my leg, then maybe I will use another student, like you said.
Sure.
But I didn't start teaching pole until I had a lot of experience. You know, I was already competing. I was already performing. I did a qualification, which wasn't the best one. Anyway, whatever. But even then, I sat on that for 6 months. I didn't start teaching straight away. I wanted to make sure that I was confident enough in what I was doing before I actually went into a teaching situation.
But do you feel like, you know, you said that course, you were like, oh, it wasn't great. But I mean, my course was good. I actually quite enjoyed the course that I did. But like, I don't feel like that taught me how to be an instructor.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It gave me the piece of paper I needed. I know it sounds terrible.
Yeah, but even, do we need, this is the weird thing, isn't it? I kind of assume when I did my course, I thought I needed that piece of paper to get insurance, which obviously you need insurance when you're teaching. And when I took out my insurance, there was no questions.
No.
There was no questions at all about my experience, qualifications, anything. It was like literally, you sign up for insurance, you're insured. I mean, whether that would stand up if there was an issue,
that's
obviously,
happens.
That's yeah. when so they say
you, yeah. and then when it comes to, so that's where they'll catch you. So
yeah.
if you probably read into their fine print, it probably says something about needing to have relevant qualifications or whatever.
Yeah.
But then what happens is if you ever decide to claim, they'll be like, okay, can we see all of this? And then that's
exactly.
where they hope to catch people out, I guess. And they'll be like, well, sorry, you're not qualified.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I'm insured with Equity. Do you know Equity?
Yeah, me too now.
Right. And so I'm with Equity because Equity, there's just like no limitations.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't think Equity needs you to have, because I remember someone was telling me somewhere that Equity, because it's like, it's an insurance made for performers, a lot of it as well is actually experience based. So like
exactly.
if you have a certain amount of experience, they'll still insure you. But because obviously there's some stuff that, especially for performers, especially circus artists, where there's no qualification for that type of art yet. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
So exactly.
It's very hard to have qualifications for stuff like that. But
I definitely feel better. I feel much happier being with Equity. Then I think I was with Insure for Sport beforehand. I never
exactly.
really liked that insurance.
Yeah.
I never really trusted it. So I was very happy when finally I could join Equity.
Well, for anyone who's listening to this and who is like, oh, who Equity? Equity is a performer, like an insurance company that basically does.
Well, it's a union. Equity is a union.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and they have insurance as part of the being part of the union. But they do like actors. They do all these sorts of different things. And they also cover a lot of circus performers. So they're really good. But you do have to be a performer.
Yeah.
But what's really funny is that actually, I think if I left them and went back, they probably wouldn't insure me now because I haven't got enough performing contracts, current ones. So when I signed up, I had performing contracts.
Yeah,
so I was doing a few performances in London at the time, so I used those.
Yeah.
But now I'd have to try and find some gigs or whatever just to get the insurance again. So thank God I've been with them for long enough. But
yeah, I was so happy when I did the Queen's Jubilee. That was the minute that contract came through, it was off to Equity.
Straight off to Equity.
And it was like,
yeah. I mean, you can get creative with it. I mean, sometimes like if pole companies have booked you and you get them to write a contract, you probably can get away with it still.
Of course.
But in regards to like people getting qualified, I think so long as, like I said, I didn't feel like necessarily it was anything to do with the qualification that made me ready to teach. I think it was more the practicing. And actually, I feel like, I don't know how you feel about this, I feel like we kind of maybe could really benefit at this stage of where pole is at from doing what yoga do, where you do your qualification, but then you have to do a certain amount of hours.
That's, do you know what? That's
such, so good.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, actually.
Mm.
We also have at the studio I teach, we also have a syllabus. So each level, we have a set syllabus that we allow to teach. And that sort of helps a bit because if you can't do those moves, you can't teach that level.
Right.
So that sort of helps a bit as well, having a syllabus. I don't really know how that works with other schools. I don't know if you have a syllabus.
So who is that?
That's a London Dance Academy.
Oh, okay.
The structure we have for teaching is brilliant. It is great, and it's very set in stone. It means that people really understand when they move up a level that they're working towards something else. But
I
then
used to have similar to that a long time ago, but then we actually got rid of it. So what was happening was, like, we used to have like really strict levels at my studio, but we're only a small studio and a lot of people just wanted to come with their friends. And then what was happening was one of their friends was progressing and they weren't, but they wanted to stay together. So it was like, well, you either move up on your own or, and then the other one felt bad. And I was like, oh, this doesn't really work. It didn't work for the size of my studio. Whereas somewhere
Yeah, we're very lucky in London, you know, you have a much bigger student base. So we can work like that. Mm-hmm. But it definitely helps with our teachers knowing what they can teach, whether they can teach the next level up or not, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even just for that, I think it's quite good. I mean, what's your thoughts around, you know, a student, for example, that couldn't do maybe just a couple of those moves on the syllabus, not being able to move up? Or does it not work like that? Like,
no, I mean, of course. I mean, there's core moves, there's core strength moves that you definitely need to be able to do to move up a level. You know, you may not be very flexible. That shouldn't stop you from moving up a level. I think the strength aspect of it is super important. I mean, when I was learning, I could not do a pulse sit. I just couldn't do it. But my teacher wouldn't let me move up until I got a pulse it, which I kind of get. But yeah, I would totally allow a student to move up if they weren't flexible enough to do something. I'm not flexible enough to do a lot of stuff, you know.
Right.
But yeah, the strength side of it is really a no-brainer.
It's more like the staple moves. Like, if you can't do a shoulder mount, there's no point coming to this class because we're going to be doing shoulder mount to this. I get that. I always just found with syllabuses, sometimes they can just almost be, they don't cater to everybody. So it was almost a bit too strict. But yeah. Hey, what's up, everyone? So sorry to interrupt your episode. I just wanted to come on really quickly and tell you a little bit about pololz.com. Did you know that we offer international shipping? Well, we've always offered international shipping, but now we're offering it at a much more reasonable price because shipping from the UK is crazy expensive, so we had to do something about it. So now you can get all of our awesome designs shipped to your home at a much more reasonable price. So why don't you go and check out pololz.com today? Because if you want a t-shirt that's got a picture of some pole dancing cats on, maybe some pole dancing dogs, maybe you want a t-shirt that says heels bigger than your dick on it, there's something for everyone. So go and check out pololz.com today. Let's get back to the episode. So I wanted to get on something different. Sorry, we're just blabbing away here. The one main thing that I actually, of course, wanted to talk to you about was about your leg. Because when I first met you, you had two legs. So I'm just really intrigued because I don't think we ever sat down and talked about what happened with your leg. I remember you telling me something about it, but it was so many years ago now. How long have you had the amputation? How long?
So the amputation has now been 5.5 years. So it kind of came, I had a motorbike accident, which is now 20 odd years ago. And I lived with the injuries from the motorcycle accident for all that time. Although I was having regular operations, I had like 15 surgeries to try and correct my leg. It was a different length. I didn't have an ankle. My foot was at a weird angle. You know, they'd really kind of pieced it back together, trying to make it functional, which it was. You know, I could walk on it, but I needed to use a walking stick. It was painful, and it was getting more painful over time. And I think when I started becoming more physical, I realized the limitations that I had with it, and also as I was becoming more physical, it was causing more problems. The what was left of the ankle was starting to collapse. Again, more painkillers. I was on like 4 different types of painkillers 4 times a day just to be able to work, you know, just to move around. And that really wasn't to give me a massively improved.
How long was that for? How long
was that? Oh, that was for years.
I was on those. Motorbike accident was how long before the amputation?
Oh, like 20 odd years.
Oh wow. Oh,
Yeah.
a long
Yeah,
time.
yeah, yeah, yeah. I really lived with it for a long time.
Do you ever wish that you'd done the amputation like years earlier?
Yeah, it's a weird question. I get asked that a lot. I think if I'd lost my leg at the time of the accident, I probably wouldn't have dealt with it very well.
Right.
Quite often when people have a traumatic amputation, they haven't had a chance to prepare for it, so they may wake up and suddenly their leg is gone, and
Oh my God, yeah.
whereas for me, I had all those years to absolutely develop this hatred of my leg. I absolutely hated it. It looked ugly. It didn't function well. I hated using a walking stick. Oh God, it was just everything I hated. So actually, when I finally decided that I had to choose to have the amputation, it wasn't something that was imposed on me. But I was so happy that the moment I woke up after that operation, I was so happy. And I had the chance to prepare for it. So for me, it was a great thing. And in fact, I was back in the studio 11 days after the amputation. I still had the stitches in my leg.
Oh my
But I
God.
need, for me, I needed to get on with life.
Sure.
It was just a process that I needed to go through. And it's been amazing ever since. I love being an amputee. I love my leg. I have a
That's
collection of
good.
prosthetics now. I love the visual of it. It works really well.
It looks cool.
Yeah.
They're called
Yeah,
blades,
I
right? Are they called blades?
So I
Yeah.
wear blades generally are for sports, and they're not generally recommended for day-to-day use. But for me,
Okay.
they work really well for day-to-day use. For some
Okay.
reason, I just feel more comfortable in them. And I'm lucky now that I've got quite a collection of different blades.
Because you've got like one that's got a light that comes out of it, right?
Well, I can, yeah. So there's one that when I'm performing, I add lights to it just to, why not?
Jazz
Why
it
wouldn't
up.
you?
I know, why not? That's so cool.
I've got another one that I cover in
I've
crystals.
seen the crystal one. The crystal one's amazing.
I've also got this one that doesn't come out very often that, I don't know if you know that model, Victoria Modesta, the girl with the black spike leg. She did a whole load for Channel 4, during the Paralympics. I'm sure you'll recognize the visual of it when you see it. But
Maybe,
I also
yeah.
did some work with the artist that made her leg for her. So I have this really beautiful leg, which is made specifically for pole. So I have that as well.
Nice.
No, I love my prosthetics.
And do you ever get like how do they make sure that you don't get imbalances in your hips? Because obviously I assume that the measurements for it, right, they must have to be spot on. Is that
They
right?
are, but it's so weird. I was literally talking about this today because I feel like my hip on my long leg is slightly moving. I need to do some strength exercises. The
Right.
problem you have is with a blade, it is measured for the length when you have a shoe on.
Right,
So
okay.
when I exercise barefoot, then suddenly the blade is slightly longer. So now I have, because I've got so many blades, I have one that is set to barefoot. So that's the one I
Right, I
tend to
see.
teach in more. But yeah, it's something I have to be slightly aware of, and I do need to keep my core muscles and my ass muscles strong to try
Yeah.
and resist that kind of like slight twist out to the side. But that's
Yeah,
a really
do you
good
have,
question, but
yeah, I literally was thinking about it because, you know, like, yeah, as someone who suffers with a bad back every now and then, like, I remember, like, shoes and stuff for me are one thing that can really set my back off. And I've got to be at that age where literally my shoes dictate how my back feels sometimes. And
You
I
are
just thought,
not at
like, I wonder. Is it well?
that
So imagine, like, so I'm 35 now. Imagine what I'm going to be like when I'm in my 50s. But, like, you know, and you're like, that's why I wondered, like, how they sort of do that. So the ones where you were saying about, like, if you were doing it barefoot, is there not something that you could just put on the bottom of it, like an attachment or something, just to it almost like, so it's not a full shoe, it's just like an extra bit of height or anything, or
Yeah,
is there a
no,
way to adjust it yourself?
the problem is not the blade, the problem is my leg length. So when I have a shoe on, my leg is longer.
Right.
But when I take my shoe off, effectively my leg is shorter. So to adjust the blade, I would have to slice out a chunk of metal which is like this kind of like post that holds the blade in place. That's what dictates the length of it. So it's impossible to make those alterations when you take your shoe off, put your shoe back on.
Is it hard to put it on and off? Just on in like a second.
So I'm just taking it off. So I have a little button on the side of here, which is a valve.
Okay.
And on my leg, I have this rubber stock thing that has these little fins on. And when I push this into the leg, it pushes the air out through that valve. And there's a vacuum that holds it in place.
I see. Oh, God.
There's lots of different ways of keeping it on. One has a pin on the bottom, which clicks into the leg. But the problem for me with that is when I take my leg off, suddenly you've got this metal pin sticking out and it can get in the way a bit. So the vacuum system works really well.
Would be connected what to bone, would it, or something? Or
no. Sorry, where my little white fins are on that liner. It has a metal pin on the bottom. But there is this thing called osseointegration. Sorry, we're absolutely digressing here. But you can now have a pin put straight into the bone in the bottom of your amputation. Which then they attach the metalwork to on the outside, so you have a permanent attachment for your prosthetic on the bottom of your leg. The only problem is you can sometimes get infections because obviously where the skin is around the metal piece, it's an open wound. But they seem to be making big progressions with that. It looks kind of weird when you see just this bit of metal sticking out the bottom of somebody's leg, but for some people it works really well.
And how were you? I know you said when you woke up you were really, really happy. Did you hit any stumbling blocks when you first? Because you have to teach yourself to walk again, I assume. And is that really, what was that process like? How was your mental health going through all that?
Yeah, the process for me, I wanted to get through that process as quickly as possible.
Sure.
I wanted to get the prosthetic. I wanted to be up and about as quickly as I could. But you have this issue with your body healing and your body can only heal at a certain rate. And you have a lot of swelling on your leg. So it takes time for the swelling to go down. They can only fit you for a prosthetic once a certain amount of swelling is gone. Then, 6 weeks after they give you a prosthetic, it doesn't fit anymore because the swelling has changed again.
Right.
So it's so much going backwards and forwards to the prosthetic unit. And I did find that challenging. And it's also really painful at first. You get a lot of blisters on your leg where the new skin is not used to anything and suddenly it's getting rubbed against the prosthetic. So I'd get blisters, which mean that I couldn't wear my prosthetic for a couple of weeks. You go through phases where you think, oh, I'm never going to walk again. And then suddenly you're walking. And then it's like, oh, I'm never going to walk for longer than 10 minutes. And then suddenly you're walking for an hour. So you make these kind of like jumps. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I'm wearing my prosthetic all day. I'm not using a walking stick. I'm not using crutches. So those goalposts are great, but it is mentally hard work. It is hard work. Just because you're constantly waiting for your body to catch up and there is nothing that you can do about it other than
wait.
And
when you were from the day that you had your amputation to the like what you were saying, like wearing it all day, fully comfortable, what is that process like? A year, two?
Oh no, for me it was a lot quicker than that because mine was a planned amputation. You don't have all the other injuries that are going on to heal.
Right.
So I had my first prosthetic 6 weeks after the amputation.
Wow.
But it probably took me another 6 months after that to get rid of my crutches altogether. So for me, it was quite quick. Some people don't get the first prosthetic for months, you know. So yeah, I'd say it was about 6 months before I could wear my prosthetic all day. And I'd got rid of the crutches.
And I know this is a really odd question. I don't know if you've ever been asked this before, but you said 6 weeks. In my head, I'm just thinking that if my leg had been amputated, obviously where it had been amputated, to put weight onto that after six weeks, is that not really pain? Is it not like still a wound?
It is, but actually you are not supported on the end of your stump. at all. So the prosthetic, no, the prosthetic is actually molded to your leg. So actually all of my weight is supported by the area below my knee and my shin.
Right.
There's actually, at the bottom of the prosthetic, there's a very slight gap. So your stump never touches the bottom of the prosthetic.
See, if I hadn't asked this, I would never have known.
You would, nobody would know this stuff.
You call it the stump.
Yeah, I think
the stump part. No, I assumed that was going to press down into it. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And in fact, the end of my stump is a little bit sensitive. Some people can actually walk on the end of their stumps.
Wow.
That is never going to be possible for me. But you know, it makes no difference whatsoever. You know.
Sure. So, tell me about going back to pole after having the amputation. Like, what stumbling blocks did you hit? Are there movements? Are there any particular movements that are just absolutely a no go? Because you do still have, you can still leg hang on it, can't you? Because you've still got the knee area to hook with. Is there any movements that, like brass monkey, is that possible on that leg or?
Yeah, it sort of is. I wouldn't trust it. If I'm in brass monkey, I have to have my other foot hooked behind the pole.
I see. Just in case.
Exactly. So I can use it as a transition, but I wouldn't trust it on its own.
Right.
I can't do an inside leg hang off it. It's completely the wrong part of my leg has gone to hang from an inside leg hook.
Uh-huh.
And anything where the pole slides along my stump in a transition is no good because the end of my stump is a little bit sensitive.
Yeah.
So it's outside leg hook, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fine, that's no problem.
So it's actually not really restricted you in too much.
Things that I didn't think about. I mean, like I can't do a crucifix. I cannot do a crucifix to save my life.
So do you have to do more like a thigh hold or something instead?
Exactly. Right. There's always ways around things. But I hadn't. Crucifix was not one of the moves that I thought I would lose. But it is, it's one of those things.
It's funny. I was talking to someone the other day about this. Like I was teaching my advanced courses. We were like recapping over, trying to do elbow aches on both sides. So, and we were doing crucifix and everyone was like, God, this is really weird. It was weird. I haven't done a crucifix since I was a beginner because crucifix is almost like quite a basic movement. It doesn't look pretty, does it?
We tend
to find other cool, interesting transitions into these moves rather than going crucifix then. You know what I mean?
But one of my problems was, elbow Aisha is a classic one. So when I went back without my leg and I couldn't crucifix, it was like, crap. I now have to learn another way to get into
elbow Aisha.
So in fact, I always pop into it now, which is not necessarily, it takes a while to get that confidence to do it. Exactly. But that is now my go-to way to get into an elbow Aisha. Uh-huh. So, sometimes I've had to learn slightly harder transitions to get into moves, which is great now,
Right.
I'm really glad that they're my go-to things. But sometimes when I'm teaching, it's like, oh crap, I've got to come up with an easier way to do this or teach this that way just to the advanced students,
but that's the beauty I think of pole is the adaptation. I mean, I always say to my students, I'll be teaching a move and I'll be like, this is the move and then we'll do it, and I'll be like, listen, this isn't gonna look great when I show this, but I'm going to show you how you would grab your leg and you could extend it, you could pull it to your head if you're flexible enough, and I'll be like, look, here's my version, and I'll show them, and they'll just be, we'll just laugh, and they'll be like, well, now you have a try and see if you can make it look better than mine, because for me it doesn't really work. But I think that's just the beauty of teaching, isn't it? It's all about adaptation, just trying.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you said that, actually, about you demonstrating that. I was teaching jades at the weekend, and my jades are awful. They're awful. I mean, the technique is getting into it is perfect, but my actual jade itself is not, it's certainly not flat. But I tell them that, but it's like, I can teach you the technique, but it's not my class, it's your class.
Sure, exactly.
You know, it will look better on you, but this is how you get into it. And I like that that's fine to do that, you know.
The truth is that actually as teachers, it's not about us in that hour. It's not about us at all. And I try to always remind myself that, because I have been to classes before where the teachers can be a bit, look at me, look what I can do. And don't get me wrong, I love to make, like, especially when I'm going to other people's classes, I love to be like, oh my God, you're amazing. And like, really big them up and stuff. So I think it's nice. But actually, you know, when I'm in a class, I try to just be more like, listen, this is another option that you can do, but it's not my forte, but I'd love to see someone have a go with this variation and see if they can make it look better than mine. Like, I love challenging people to do stuff that I can't, do you know what I mean? As long as it's safe. I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh, hey, I can't do a triple backflip from the top of the pole, but I'd love to see you try.
Yeah, no, I mean, the safety and good technique is one thing. I mean, that's what everybody should have. But there is no right and wrong.
Of course.
I find it slightly frustrating when somebody says to me, no, you're doing that wrong. When I'm getting into the final position, it's like, well, what works for your body might not necessarily work for mine.
Yeah.
So it's kind of...
Do you think you've got more of an appreciation of that fact now as well, especially with the amputation and stuff? Do you think now you're like, actually... Yeah, sure. Let's find you another way, because I totally feel what that's like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or if I'm teaching a combo and somebody gets halfway through and they realize that actually this side isn't working for them, I am all about a side change, because I have to change sides all the time to do stuff.
Right.
And I'm absolutely fine with that, as long as you make it creative. Own that side change.
Yeah,
that's absolutely fine.
I teach a combos class in my workshops, and I always say to them, I'm like, listen, this combo has been made for my body, and I am happy inverting both sides. But if you're not, I'm going to give you an option where we keep it to your good side. And I'm always just like, but, you know, when you go away, it would be worth trying to get this stuff on the other side, because it's going to help your bodies do both. But, yeah. Hey, what's up, everyone? Sorry to interrupt your podcast. I just wanted to come on and tell you really quickly about one of our sponsors for this podcast, which is Superfly Honey. So tell me, do you want to be Superfly Honey? Well, honey, of course you do. Well, if you want to be Superfly, you need to make sure you get yourself some Superfly Honey grip leggings. Now, Superfly Honey specialize in these grip leggings that you may have seen all over Instagram at the moment. Everybody's wearing them. And these are great for anyone who like to just keep themselves a little bit more covered up. Maybe you're poling in a cold country and you need some extra grip because your skin just isn't giving you the grip you need. Well, Superfly Honey have got you covered with their grip leggings. Now, they told me to give an honest review, and I did have a pair sent to me. And I can tell you the only thing that was sad about them was that the pair they sent me didn't fit me. They were too small and they were too short because I needed their tall range. So if you're like me and you're a tall bitch too, guess what? They've got their own tall range. They obviously just didn't realize that I was a 6 foot glamazon. So they sent me their tall range, and now I have one of their tall pairs of leggings, and they fit so snug. There's no movement on them. I didn't feel like they were going to cause any friction. They were super tight to the legs, so they felt really comfortable. And for any of you out there who like to stay covered up, these are amazing for you and definitely an option to try out. So go and check out Superfly Honey. So with regards to the after the amputation, this obviously qualifies you really to be able to compete in the para pole competitions, and you've done IPSF, haven't you?
Yeah.
And tell us, what competitions have you done? Which ones have you won? Come on, give us all the facts of competitions and stuff that you've done.
Cool. Well, I started with IPSF because it made sense for me to do para pole, and I've done technically 3 times world champion. That one year was during COVID, and it was kind of everything was done by video, so that's kind of like,
even though counts. I was
yeah
still counts.
But then para pole is one thing. It's amazing, and it's an amazing platform. IPSF have built an amazing competition. It gets a lot, it's brought me a lot of press, a lot of attention, but it also can be slightly restrictive.
Slightly.
Their rules for parapole, it kind of restricts the moves that you can do, where in fact some of the super high level moves are easier for me than some of the moves that they allow you to do parapole.
You're restricted on the moves that you can. So they don't let you do any old move you want.
Yeah. So in parapole, you can't do any move that scores over 0.5. And yeah, there's the compulsory score up to 0.9, I think. I can do a Russian split. I can't do some of the, 0.1 flexibility moves, but I don't have the choice to add that into my routine and get scored on it. Of course, I can add those moves in and, they just won't receive points. But I find that kind of a little bit annoying. And at some point, also, I need to sit down with them and talk about it. Because they set
actually.
That...
Why does it mean that because someone's a parapoler that they can't do advanced stuff?
Yeah. It is what it is. It's still an amazing platform and I still put in other moves, but just as a way of showing off, really. They're not necessarily point scoring moves. But then out of that, I realized what I really want to do is compete against able-bodied polos in exactly the same way that you would compete and anybody else would compete. Not really expecting to do well, but it's more about just showing people what I could do. And I my first competition, non-parapole, was Pole Theatre, the amateur one, in 2020. You were judging.
And then didn't you win that one?
Yeah, I did. Which was, I mean, I get it. It was, I still have this weird imposter syndrome. I tell a great story and this is definitely one of my strengths is telling stories through the routine as well as technique itself. After that, I'm just looking, my medals are all like by the side of the phone.
What a brag that was. Peek at my medals a second.
So from there I did, what else have I done? UK PPC. I've done the Nepal Championships.
or was it after
yeah.
that? Oh no, actually what year did you do it? You did it when it was taken
out. I still have trauma.
Yes, I still have
that routine. I still have trauma about that routine. And it's not about the routine itself. I love the routine. But the judging was questionable. I'm not saying that I should have won at all. That's not what it's about. But some of the judging was bad. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
I don't have an opinion on that. I wouldn't speak anything.
I know you have an opinion on that, Dan. We all know you have an opinion on it. And it's weird. God. When you started talking about that whole thing, I didn't really understand what the problem was. I wasn't that experienced in competitions.
Yeah, I think it's because I just have this, if it's not broken, don't fix it mentality. Right. I feel like you could have made the old style competition be better, sure, but it didn't have to change as radically as it did. And yeah, that's ultimately why I think it failed. And I just, that's why it's not happening anymore. But I'm so glad that Elite is happening. Did you enjoy Elite?
Oh, I loved Elite. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great level of competitor. I absolutely agreed with the results. The feedback was amazing. I was judged by people.
Who won your category?
Oh, Gracie. Oh, God.
Gracie.
Funnily enough, I was warming up on stage at the same time as her. And I was watching her warm up and I was like, nobody stands a chance against her. I mean, she's amazing. She's super flexible. She's super strong. She tells a great story. It was amazing. But I loved the competition. And like I say, the feedback was incredible from people I respect within the industry as well, which makes a massive difference. But then also before that, I also entered Pole Theatre Pro. That happened this year as well. Drama again, and I won that, which was, it's amazing winning those competitions. And I've got another two coming up. I've got the London Pole Championships again. Then I'm also doing the British Pole Instructor Championships, which actually I judged last year, and I loved the competition so much that I thought this year I'm actually going to take part in it.
That's Pam McGee's competition, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was such an amazing day. And I wasn't sure how I felt about having judged it and then being part of it. And I kind of spoke to Pam about it, and she was like, you should absolutely do it. And I feel actually really good about putting myself forward and being on stage as well.
Just because you've judged something doesn't mean that you don't have that fire to want to be on stage anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. But it's just, I wasn't sure if it was weird that entering a competition, the same competition that you had judged, it's...
Do you feel the pressure in the sense that you've been a judge, so you feel that you have to do really well? Well,
absolutely.
Listen, let me tell you now, as your career goes on, that only gets worse, I can tell you, because there's been so many times that I thought, oh, I'll shine to this comp, and then I have to look at my diary and be like, right, if you're actually going to do it, you need to make sure that you can do it properly. And if you can't, then don't, because you're potentially risking your reputation of doing a really good show. And it's that, I take it really seriously. So it's that whole thing of, and you know what it is? It's because when people start to know you and they're like, oh, yeah, Andrew's won the last Pole Theatre and he won this. He's going to be amazing. He's going to do this. That all of a sudden becomes this really big pressure on you, because you're like, people are going to expect.
I am starting to feel that already. But then, oh, let's see. I mean, at the moment in professional.
Yeah.
This is the last lot of competitions that I get to do professional and have to go up to elite.
You have to go to elite.
And I think that's probably maybe a step too far for me. It's for me at my age. I mean, it's not just my age, but it's not just my leg. My shoulders are wrecked. I've got this weird hand condition that makes my hands curl over.
Is that from hairdressing?
It's a genetic thing called Dicotron's contracture. I've already had one hand operated on.
Hairdressing or something.
No, it's just your genes make these lumps grow on your hand, so your fingers slightly curl over. And I had an operation last year to flatten out my right hand, but now my left hand started. So anyway, so there's so much more going on. And to compete against elite level polos may be a step too far. We'll see.
But you want to challenge yourself as well. But the reason I was mentioning like the whole pressure thing, because I wanted to say that actually, even though we do worry a lot about that, I mean, there might be the odd few people who are a bit like, who are putting that pressure on you. But genuinely, I don't know that anyone really thinks of it that way. Do you know? I don't think anyone really thinks, oh, they didn't win. Like, oh, that's not great. I don't think anyone cares enough to think of it in that depth. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're just happy for whoever wins that day.
Right.
If they win, they win. No one thought anything less of all the other pole stars that did elite pole championships. And,
absolutely.
I know this sounds really harsh, but there's so many comps now. Once one comp's done, people forget they're on to the next comp. So it's one of those things, whereas actually years and years ago where there was only maybe four competitions across the whole world, like pole art was like one of the big ones. That used to be one of the ones where people would expect certain people to win, and they maybe would be like, oh, okay, they didn't do as well as we'd hoped. But it didn't make us think anything less of them. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And also somebody once said to me, the day after competition, nothing has changed. If you win or you lose, actually the next day nothing really changes. You've got a bit of kudos to talk about for a couple of weeks when people ask you how you did.
Exactly.
And then it sort of just melts away.
Exactly. It is what it is. It's a competition. Only one person can win. Can't all be winners. Do you actually, in fact, I tell you what, I want to ask you about that. Like, do you feel like we've kind of gotten into a bit of a mentality within the pole industry with like the whole trying to be inclusive and trying to make everyone feel welcome? I do really want that. But I also believe that a competition it's a competition. We can't all be winners. You know, we don't need all these little rewards. Like, just give us the first, second, third. Like, that's all people need.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I absolutely love the whole process of competing. I love the putting the routine together. I love the day of the competition. If I agree with the result, I absolutely don't care if I win or not. You know, it's, you know, at EPC, everyone was so amazing. I was just really happy to be on the stage, show what I could do. That day it didn't win, absolutely makes no difference whatsoever. But yeah, the inclusivity thing, I mean, I do think it's sad that disabled polos feel that they can only compete in a disabled competition. I kind of learned to talk about my other restrictions. So this is just one little point. I also broke my other ankle in a couple of years after I had my motorbike accident. So I physically cannot fully point my right foot. I can't. It goes to, it's about, I don't know, 45 degrees instead of the whole way. And I was getting comments on that all the time in competition. And it drives me mad because there's nothing I can do about it. And then I realized, why don't I pass out that information? So just now, whenever I compete, I pass on the information via the organizers. Please ask the judges not to comment on the fact that I can't fully point my foot. I can't do anything about it. It's like saying, oh, can you grow your other leg back, please?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we've got to learn that actually, if we have a physical impairment, it's okay to pass that information on via the organizers
to
the judges.
Or to put it in your bio.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Because actually, do you know what? Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying. So many people say like, I keep getting feedback that, you know, I wasn't looking at the audience enough, but I suffer with really bad, Asperger's she has or something. I can't remember what it was. But unless you announce, because some of these judges don't know you, so they might not know. But it's also like, that might have been a bad example, but like if something like you physically are unable to do, right? Like,
no, I think that's a great example, actually. Kind of like autism, all those sort of things that make it hard to connect with an audience, pass that information
on.
It's
got to be considered, yeah. I think, don't get me wrong, it doesn't necessarily, I don't also necessarily think it should mean that they, how do I word this? Like, you know, for example, like if they're not connecting with the audience, fine. But if they're also not connecting with their routine, that's a problem still. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not looking, when I talk about my foot, I am not looking for any kind of extra points or anything like that. But it's just an awareness that if somebody physically can't do it, then surely that's got to be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of, as long as if my foot is flexed, you go for it. You can criticize me all you want. If my foot is flexed, that is a thing to talk about. If it's not flexed, then for me, that's pointed.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like you said, it's like you wouldn't say, it would be great to see you inside leg on both legs.
Yeah exactly.
When you only have a half leg. It's like, and they would never say that. But that's because they can physically see with their eyes
exactly.
You don't have
exactly.
the leg. Whereas if they don't know about your ankle, but they can see you've got an ankle, but they don't know there's something wrong with it, you know, it's that whole thing of like, if we don't know, this is actually one of the reasons why I stopped judging, because, you know, we weren't always being provided with this information, and then the judges were getting the flak for it. And it became a really hard environment. I think the competitions are now starting to adapt a lot more to it with the judges are getting a lot more information, but yeah, for sure. I think, do you think the pole industry is inclusive? Like competitions wise, do you think it's inclusive?
I think it's trying to be, but also, I mean, people have to take a little bit of responsibility themselves. So nobody has ever said to me, oh, can you tell us the restrictions that you have with your body? You know, they see my invitation, but they never ask about any other information. It was me that had to go to them to give them the information. And that's fine. That's my responsibility to do that. People can't second guess anything. Mm-hmm. And I think actually if you have a problem that stops you from doing something, pass the information on. You've got to take the responsibility for yourself. You can't expect everyone to already have that information. It's just, yeah. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. This has come up a few times on the podcast. It's a really big topic at the moment, isn't it? Of like inclusiveness. I think, you know, it's something that every industry should be striving to do anyway without having to, you know, I get this funny thing about the whole gay pride thing where companies just slap a pride flag on there. You know, that doesn't make it inclusive, but is it a good step? Well, I mean, it's better than nothing.
And also those big companies pay good sponsorship. So it's like, it's bringing money in.
Right. I just think, sure, it might be a bit performative, but listen, I'd rather have performative support than none at all, right?
Yep.
It's difficult. I think, you know, when it comes to like whole competition and stuff, making them inclusive, I think it's so hard to, you know, we need to, I saw a post a while back with someone was talking about like, oh, you know, people are saying they're inclusive, but, you know, they aren't doing the work. But the difficulty is that not many people really know what the work actually is. And unless that's we know it. What the work is, yeah. Yeah. People are like,
What work? You have to include something, a space where somebody can communicate something. So maybe on like competition entry forms, you know, name, you know, all the usual information.
Mm-hmm.
And a box for, is there any information you want to tell us about yourself? You
know, yeah.
Give people the opportunity to do it, and then they'll do it.
And then just like on the scoring sheets next to their name, just a little box that says, note, he's unable to point his foot because of an injury. At least that's
I mean, it was great, actually, at EPC when I went to remind Stacey to pass on the information. Of course, I've now competed with Stacey a few times, in Stacey's competition a few times. She's like, don't worry, it's already done. It was already taken care of.
Yeah.
So it's like when they have the information, it will be taken care of. You know? At least it should be.
Yeah, of course. I mean, at the same time, it must be really, really difficult, I'm sure, as competition organisers to do all these little things they have to do. So this is why, again, it'd be great like if that was on sort of like a sign-up sheet so that when the people are signing up, they'd be like, is there any medical or physical impediments that we need to know about like before you go on stage that we can let the judges...
Because it shouldn't stop you from competing. Yeah, it shouldn't stop you from competing. The fact that I can't point my foot should not stop me from being able to win a competition.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. I think we're getting there for sure. I definitely when I started pole dancing, I don't know if you've experienced this as a guy. Like, have you ever found like you've not felt included as a guy? Because I mean, maybe not so much when you started, but when I started, me and Sam King were like some of the first boys that started doing poles. When we started doing competitions, like, it was hard for us because, like, you know, it was very new. So we got lucky in the sense that we did quite well at competitions because we were a novelty. No one had seen boys doing pole comps at that point.
Right.
But I also had a lot of competitions that wouldn't let me compete. So whereas now, that's not really as much of a thing. So it has changed a lot for sure. But have you ever felt that as a guy pole dancer at all?
No, I haven't. But I'll tell you what really drives me mad. They would have a prize bag that was aimed at a guy. I'm so fed up of having, but I've got so many pole
bikini sets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you know what? I used to always selling them to friends or giving them to friends.
I just give them away. But it'd be really nice if they would have like an option.
Well, I'll tell you what, actually, back in the day, when there were less, X-Pole used to give X-Poles as a prize.
Oh, so yeah.
I remember winning a few poles, and I was like, this is really useful, actually, because I hadn't set up my studio, but I remember having, when I set up my studio, I already had a few poles, I just needed the extensions. And, so that was back when, comps were really good, like the prizes were really good. But I think the difficulty is now is that we have so many comps.
Absolutely.
How can you provide high quality prizes for all these people? I agree. I think maybe it'd almost be better rather than giving the sets at the competition, because also I'm not being funny, but What if someone like a plus size pole dancer wins and they've got a size six
set? What do they do? That's so true. That is so true.
I think to be fair though, just FYI, I think normally if you contact the company and say, hey, like I won, but I've got a girl set, can I exchange it for a men's? If they do men's, that's a whole other subject
That's men's pole wear. I mean men's pole wear.
It's just But then do you know what? I will say, yeah, sure, we don't actually have much choice. I use Pole Hog as my go-to for all my pole wear, but it doesn't make them much money. It's not worth it. I totally get it.
I know. So I actually, I use this company called Modus Vivendi, which is actually a swimwear and underwear company. And I use their swimwear as...
What's it called?
Power. Modus Vivendi.
Hold on. I'm going to quickly write that down.
They do great stuff. I mean, it's not cheap. But, you know, the quality is amazing. Pole. Yeah. And it comes from... Greece, which is a bit of a pain now because it used to be here in like a couple of days. Now it can take like, you know, weeks because of Brexit, you know, same old deal. But yeah, I love their stuff. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. It's definitely difficult as a guy, I'd say, like to get pole clothing. But again, another thing that is really, really sad in a way for men is that, you know how girls have got these like two-piece sets. But like for guys, when we wear two-piece sets, I feel like it feels odd on me. Like it looks like I'm a guy wearing a crop top and I'm like, what else could I wear on top? I think Nick's got a really good balance where he wears kind of like a cropped vest. So it's I think I'd probably move more towards that. But yeah.
So when I was in New York, I went to train. I always go and train at Body and Pole. And for the last sort of year or so, they now... do not let you take your top off when you train, which is a bit of a shock when I first went. But it's like, oh, as a guy, what do I wear as a top that doesn't get in the way when I'm
So what do you do then? You training. Just roll it up. Well, to be fair.
No, I've got a vest that's really cut away, but it still has fabric on the shoulder. So if you're doing shoulder mounts, that's annoying. And it's cut away enough here so I can still use that as a grip. And if I need my... sides, I can roll up a bit, but it's really annoying.
Yeah,
it's really annoying.
Why they've done that? You know, part of me wants to be a bit like, oh, why not? But actually, you know, if any of the you know people with boobs said, oh, hey, can I take my top off? No. Everyone would feel uncomfortable about it. So why is it different when the men do it? So I get why they've done it. And actually, to be fair, when I teach, I deliberately don't want people to feel uncomfortable with me just walking around with my tits out. Do you know what I mean? So I keep my vest top on when I need my side out. I just roll it up. Yeah. It doesn't really bother me. I'm not body confident enough where I like just walking around with my top off anyway. So it's that whole thing of like, just roll it up and it's fine.
I think because of my tattoos, I never really feel like I've got my top off anyway. I never feel naked. I never feel undressed. So
that
it's kind
is
of,
so funny.
It doesn't
I've
bother me.
Thought of it like that before. It literally feels like you're wearing like a tattoo t-shirt.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, I could talk to you for hours. I've had such a great conversation with you. Thank you for coming on and joining us. I want you to give yourself a little plug. Tell us, where can people find you? Are you teaching online? What's your Instagram? Have you got a website? Any of that stuff? Let us know.
Yeah, cool. So I teach at London Dance Academy every Sunday. I do like 4 back-to-back classes on a Sunday. Also, I teach some workshops there as well. Coming up, I have... what have I got next? What's next? The London Pole Championships, followed by the British Pole Instructor Championships, both in September.
Good luck.
My Instagram is Tattoo Pole Boy, although now I've added my name to it. So actually, if you put in Andrew Gregory, I will pop up well. I mean, there's always loads of things. I've got some performances coming up, but they're at random venues. It was pointless me talking about those now. Everything is always on my Instagram socials regarding my performance stuff. Yeah.
Well, as well, if anyone listening to this is ever in London, most of them, I guess, will be visiting on the weekend anyway. So, yeah, go to Andrew's class on the Sunday and go and check him out. But thank you so much for coming on. And
thanks for having me. Thanks for
having
me.
You. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for sticking with us through this episode. That was a bit of a long one today, but I just loved speaking to Andrew. What an interesting guy and what a cool life that he's lived. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Let me know what you think of it and let me know if you've got anyone else that you want to hear from. My DMs are always open. So see you on the next episode. Bye.
That was all the tea that you can get this week. Join me next time right here. It's the Weekly Deep.